the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good Wednesday morning, and thanks for joining us today. Here on AgNet West, Farm City Newsday, we are jumping right into the program today, starting off with our headlines. Brian German is talking with us about the recent developments that are weighing in on California's dairy quota. You'll hear about Prop 15 from California Farm Bureau's Administrator Jim Houston later in our interview segment of the show. Taylor Hillman has details on Valley Walnuts and how they're looking good for harvest. And I'm starting off the show today with news on what's happening in Washington as Congress prepares for the end of the fiscal year and how it's going to impact the ag industry. Congress is using a CR for governmental budgeting, and Ranking House Agriculture Committee member Mike Conway shares why there's a problem, particularly for rural America.
What's happening right now, the only thing Congress has to do year in and year out is fund the government for the next fiscal year. This fiscal year ends on October 1st, or September 30th. The new fiscal year starts October 1st. And we've not put in place the appropriations for next year's business. And so if nothing happens between now and September 30th, we quote unquote shut the government down. Well, nobody in their right mind wants to do that a month out in front of the election, because that's just not good for anyone. And so we will do what's referred to as a CR. In its purest form, it simply says you spend money in the new fiscal year exactly the way you spend it in the old fiscal year, and to move forward. In the ag world, one of the anomalies that has been done in the past under the Obama administration and last year is to replenish the CCC. The Commodities Credit Corporation is that funding cash flow mechanism that USDA uses to pay the bills. Title I, Title II, trade promotion programs, all those kind of good things get paid out of that, as well as the market facilitation payments from last year, some of the extra CFAP money that was not directly appropriated under the CARES Act.
Conway says the CCC is nearly capped out, which is why replenishment come October is critical for producers who enrolled in USDA programs and their lenders.
So producers signed up for those programs last year. They were expecting these payments in October. They've always gotten them in October. But for whatever reason, my Democrat colleagues have decided to not replenish the CCC as a part of this CR.
Conway said that's simply not fair.
Last week, when four members of the Senate went down to the floor to have a colloquy about how important this was, it made the ranking member on the Senate Ag Finance Approach Committee, mad. And so she came down and lit it up. And so all of this deal kind of came unwrapped. And then Friday, Mnuchin and Pelosi thought they had a deal, or Mnuchin thought he had a deal with Speaker Pelosi, and was ready to move forward, told our leadership, hey, it's fixed, it's done. And then an hour and a half later, she called back and said, nope, CPAP, CCC funding's out of the CR. And that's what was dropped yesterday. And all I can say is just I can't explain why. I can say how. My conjecture is that they're wanting to punish rural America because rural America generally supports President Trump.
And now here's Taylor Hillman with more agriculture news.
Field reports from Central Valley Walnuts are looking good as harvest approaches. Certified crop advisor and sustainability specialist at UltraGrow, Richard Kreps, was recently servicing crops in the Central Valley and said the orchards for his walnut clients look strong this year.
Not too bad, actually. The Tulare crop that I'm on or was in a field that I just recorded a video was actually a younger field. They looked beautiful. Nuts were big and had some weight. The color was very light, which was nice. So I was pretty happy with that. I think the crop looks good.
It's supposed to be a big crop this season. Kreps added that prices just need to work out for walnut producers finally.
Unfortunately, our walnut guys, I think, have had one good year in the last eight with price. With China controlling the market, that's a little bit of a struggle for them. So I think the Chandlers, always the bread and butter, I think they're going to be just fine and they look big. Sirs are just so hit and miss with the pistolet obsession that they lose so many nuts early in the season that that's always a bit of a crapshoot. But I've got some guys down in Kings County that the sirs look pretty good.
Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
In the coming weeks, a hearing will be taking place on the future of California's quota implementation plan. There have been multiple efforts by various groups to address the dairy QIP over the last year and a half. One of the efforts initiated by the United Dairy Families of California is moving forward with a hearing scheduled for the end of the month. Economist for Western United Dairies, Annie Akmudi, explained what the hearing will be addressing.
So there was a petition that came from United Dairy Families of California as a result of a multi-year process really of analyzing what could be a good compromise for the industry. And so they announced that proposal of the farm show. They had hired an outside team of economists to come up with this solution. And, you know, they came to that via a lot of surveys of the industry. And basically, it would sunset the quota implementation plan in 2025. And so that just means that quota will go away as of that date. And before that, so after there would be a referendum, if producers wanted to go along, then the regional quota adjusters would be all brought to the same level. And so currently, you know, quota holders get a different payment for their quota, depending on what county they're located in. This would basically make everybody get the same payment as those who are located in Tulare. And so there's going to be a public hearing on this matter. It's going to be virtual. It'll be held on September 30th and October 1. And basically, you know, people will be able to give their opinion as to whether this should move to a referendum or not.
Researchers are looking at a new method for testing water for potential cyclosporic contamination. Professor of Microbial Food Safety at the University of Delaware, Dr. Kaylee Neal, told the Center for Produce Safety that there's still much to be known about cyclospora, particularly as it relates to its biological process and how it interacts with food products. As outbreaks associated with cyclospora have seen a significant increase in recent years, getting a better understanding of the pathogen is critical. Neal will be collaborating with other agencies and institutions in the development of a better testing method and water filtration approach. The team is working with a byproduct of the steel industry called ZVI, or zero valent iron. If the material proves to be an effective way to neutralize and remove bacterial, viral, and chemical contaminants, it could offer a cost-effective means for reducing pathogen risks in agricultural water sources. Neal emphasizes that any filtration system would be an addition and would not replace other good agricultural practices and sound cold chain management. The team is also working to evaluate a new testing method to more accurately confirm the presence of cyclospora in water samples. For Agnet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Thanks, Brian. And it is time for us to head out for a quick break, but we'll be back with more agriculture news, including our livestock report, when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. And we're back with more Farm City News Day by Agnet West. Here's Brian German.
The Cattle Reproduction Council's annual meeting is coming up on November 10th through the 12th. There will be more than 20 presenters sharing information to help optimize dairy cattle reproduction programs. The virtual meeting will take place using the online conference platform Zoom. Some of the presentations include a discussion on the future of dairy management decisions based on big data analytics, using digital technology to optimize health and reproductive management, and economics of rearing replacement heifers and culling strategies in times of good fertility and genomics. DCRC Annual Meeting Program Chair Eduardo Ribeiro said that moving to an online platform this year will help to provide information to a more diverse global audience. The DCRC is focused on bringing together producers, consultants, academia, and allied industry professionals to help improve reproductive performance. For Agnet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Well, in today's livestock news, now that USDA has announced a new round of disaster assistance for ag producers, otherwise known as CFAP2, the National Milk Producers Federation has created a resource guide to help dairy farmers better understand and apply for the program. Their toolbox includes a breakdown of what the latest coronavirus food assistance program includes for dairy, as well as a link to relevant application resources. Some of the highlights of CFAP2 for dairy producers include a payment amounting to $1.20 per hundredweight on a farm's production during the last 9 months of 2020. Now, dairy payments will be based on actual milk production from April 1 through August 31 of this year, milk production for September 1 through December 31 of this year, but that will be estimated by FSA using daily average production from the April through August base period of known production. Also, 100% of the payment will be made once a farm's eligibility is determined, thus meaning there will be no 20% holdback. Now, for dairy beef, Producers are eligible for the cattle inventory payment on bull calves and dairy steers, but not for breeding stock. Now, that payment is $55 per head on eligible cattle in inventory on a date between April and the end of August. That date is to be selected by the producer. Plus, this round's payments limitation provision has been expanded to include trust and estates for both rounds of CFAT payments. That means those who were disadvantaged by restrictive trust-related payment interpretations in the first round will have their situation resolved for that round as well in the latest tranche of A. Now, there's a full range of coronavirus-related materials out to help dairy producers, processors, and allied businesses, and it's all on the National Milk Producers Federation website. For more information, simply go to nmpf.org/coronavirus. That's nmpf.org/coronavirus. And it was 1 year ago that Dairy Defined debuted on the National Milk Producers Federation website, and it was noted that U.S. per capita consumption was at a 56-year high. Well, according to NMPF, this information is now out of date. U.S. per capita dairy consumption is now at a 60-year high. They noted that increases in cheese and butter use last year pushed per capita U.S. dairy to its most popular year since 1960. Now, while fluid milk consumption did drop a little bit, much of that decline had to do with the rise of bottled water sales, not fake milk. But other dairy products more than offset the small fluid loss, with butter demand at its highest in more than five decades and cheese reaching another record, doubling its per capita consumption from its level seen back in the 70s. But even fluid milk numbers had its positives as whole milk consumption continued to rise. If you'd like to see more of these numbers and learn more about the 60-year high for per capita dairy consumption, go to the National Milk Producers Federation website, nmpf.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
The U.S. Envoy to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organizations highlights the direct links between hunger and extremism. Let's take a listen to more in this report with USDA Stephanie Ho and U.S. Ambassador Kip Thom.
Ambassador Kip Thom represents the United States to the United Nations Agencies for Food and Agriculture.
Without food security, it's nearly impossible to promote peace and stability around the world. So it is no coincidence that some of the least stable countries in the world are also the most food insecure. And the global pandemic has only exacerbated these conditions.
Speaking to a virtual summit hosted by AgriPulse, he noted the link between hunger and extremism.
Declines in oil revenue, tourism and national economies collapsing, massive unemployment, resulting in the lack of ability of most vulnerable to afford food, which results in the growth of extremism.
He noted that the United States plans to contribute $32 billion in foreign assistance in FY21.
So when the United States takes steps to reduce global hunger and poverty, we are also looking to protect our own security and national interests.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
You've been listening to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be right back. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. A couple weeks ago, as the California legislature wrapped up, I had the chance to talk with California Farm Bureau Administrator Jim Houston about some of the many bills that were sitting on the table. Let's take a listen to the end of my interview with Houston as he breaks down Prop 15 and more. Now, a couple that you didn't mention, and one that I kind of get fumbled up on is Prop 15, and I've seen it coupled with Prop 13. So break down what Prop 15 and if it is in connection with Prop 13 and what they are.
Yes, yes, that's a good question. Proposition 15 is, in some sense, you know, a revision of Proposition 13 from, you know, almost, 36 years ago, 34 uh-huh. years ago. And so what it does is it takes out the commercial aspect of the property tax. So Prop 13, you know, instituted, you know, basically, a restriction on the amount that people could increase property tax each year. And then this Prop 15 proposes to cleave off the commercial property aspect of that and say that they then can be reassessed, which would, you know, generate a lot of money, ostensibly, for local governments and for the state. There's a couple problems with that. You know, one is agriculture is not exempted. They say that agriculture is, but it is not. It's a sort of a red herring exemption they put in there because it's one of those where at $3 million you're going to, you know, exceed just the value of your land. And then also the trees like on your land are not exempted. So the ground is, but every tree you have is not, and every appurtenance you have is not. And so it's tricky stuff like that where, you know, we're very concerned. There's no doubt that there will be a significant financial hit to agriculture. And that's why you see all the ag groups in opposition and, you know, using resources to fight it because they know that it's going to hurt them. And we've seen, you know, in the COVID, the importance of food, during this crisis has been underscored tremendously. We're so lucky in California to have our food local and the diversity that we have. So preserving that is of the utmost importance. We're going to take an $8 to $10 billion hit, just at the farm gate level. I mean, the total food system, I think, is, you know, $330 billion or something like that, according to UC A&R. I mean, that's probably going to be half because all the food service and all that that's down. Yeah. So there's a tremendous impact on the food system, and Prop 15 is just coming along at the wrong time. And the food prices are also already on the rise as well, and we're concerned that that would exacerbate this. So, you know, for 2020 is just kind of a watershed moment, I think, and folks just need to kind of, you know, take a pause on the food system with costs and regulation, and let's make sure that we're able to keep, you know, the food flowing to, you know, grocery stores and to people, and, you know, let's fix the things that need to be fixed, you know, kind of outside that world, I guess, for the time being.
So, now that we talked about all this, what's your overall take? As I mentioned, it seems like there's always new regulations and legislations that are piled on the ag industry that always seem to weigh it down and make it a little more challenging and you know, create some hurdles for the industry to leap over. So, you know, as it sits right now, does it look like the industry has a lot to tackle moving forward?
Yeah, I do think so. You know, I think we got a little bit of a, you know, reprieve this year. There was a lot of bills that got stopped, you know, that were bad for the agriculture industry. And part of that was the effort of, you know, the ag and business folks and, you know, legislators who I think understood the moment and the need to be focused. But also because of COVID and just the clock running out, you know, less bills got passed. But, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, folks are coming for the ag industry. And I mean, I say that, but, you know, I don't know that they're intentionally trying to, you know, eradicate the agriculture industry, but they're certainly damaging the small farms. They're creating higher barriers to entry, and they're forcing consolidation. And those are all things that essentially the leadership doesn't want. I don't think Gavin Newsom or Anthony Rendon or Tony Atkins are out there, you know, saying, you know, what we really need to do is we need bigger farms, you know, bigger processing, less numbers. But the sheer fact is the result of the policies is, you know, do that. And they're going to, you know, and I think that's our sort of, you know, ask is just, you know, let's, if we want to get to a target, let's involve the farming community on how we get there. Because if not, you know, the winners are going to be, you know, the hedge funds and private equity investors, not the small farm.
Yeah. And I know that's always been California Farm Bureau's stance is, hey, you know, you guys want to make these policies, just let us have a seat at the table and hear us out. That way we can be a part of the solution. And move forward to better the ag industry and better our environment and better our world and food security and all of that.
Yep.
All right. Well, you know, Jim, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today about all of these things that have changed and things that we should keep our eye out on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you. And it is time for us to head out for a quick break, but we'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news when we return. Remember, you can catch any of today's reports by heading on over to our website. That's www.agnetwest.com for more information. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. And as I promised, we're back with more of the day's Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Our friend Tony St. James with Paramount Broadcasting made his way to Washington, D.C. to pick the brains of our nation's lawmakers and industry elites. Let's take a listen to this next report where Tony talks with Rob LaRue of the National Farmers Union about the importance of farmers' involvement when it comes to crafting policy for the industry.
You know, one of the strengths of a grassroots farm organization is, as you pointed out, making sure that we are delivering really an authentic voice from the farmers themselves to their legislators so that they truly understand what it means to be working day in and day out to produce the nation's food and fiber and fuel and, you know, all the challenges that presents and, you know, looking for ways to make ease regulations where necessary, create different policies that'll make it a fair system for farmers out there.
Rob LaRue is the president of NFU, the National Farmers Union. He's headquartered in Washington, D.C., and he talks about the importance of farmers actually getting involved.
It is a very different thing if you have a lobbyist. I don't care how good that lobbyist is. When you get the farmers themselves in there telling those stories, the value is just really unmeasurable. And this week, we had just a really unique situation where we normally have our fly-in. We have typically several hundred farmers come into Washington, D.C., comb the hills, the Capitol Hill and the halls of Congress, visit with USDA. But as you pointed out, we're in very different times right now. But farmers themselves are always willing to try to work around those unexpected challenges. And so we went virtual this year, and we had 400 farmers sign up to participate in a virtual meetings with their members of Congress, and we had over 130 of those individual meetings. We also had presentations and a chance for Q&A with some of the congressional leaders, as well as the leaders down at USDA. So in spite of the challenges there, our members rose up and made sure that Capitol Hill understood what the pandemic means, what these trade wars have meant, and what it will take to get rural America back on better footing going into the future.
And a virtual event from rural America will usually spotlight problems with broadband.
Actually, it was one of the pillars of our key issues going forward up on Capitol Hill. Obviously, we had the pandemic. We had some of those kind of market concentration issues, some related to the beef industry and things like that. And then we also had kind of rural infrastructure, and broadband was a big piece of that. And so we took it as a challenge, if you will, to first of all, try to set up these video meetings where they could. But in some cases, those video meetings had to be turned into a conference call. because the signals weren't strong enough. But because one of our talking points was about the need to be pushing for stronger broadband out there for farmers and ranchers and rural residents in general, even through those challenges, it was a great way to show by example that in spite of the fact that we've been talking about broadband in rural America for many, many years, there are still huge pockets where it simply isn't fully realized.
That's Rob LaRue. He's president of the National Farmers Union online, nfu.org. And from Washington, D.C., I'm Tony St. James.
Thanks, Tony. And rounding out our show today, three categories of commodities are covered for direct payments under USDA's latest round of the coronavirus food assistance program. We've talked about it here on our show, but here's USDA's Rod Bain with more from USDA's Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, Bill Northey, in this report.
The second round of the coronavirus food assistance program contains up to $14 billion for ag producers facing market disruptions and associated costs related to COVID-19. And Agriculture Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Bill Northey says while much of that is in direct payments,
we have three different buckets of those direct payments.
The undersecretary says payments will be made by categories of commodities. Price trigger commodities.
Commodities that had a 5% price drop. Corn, soybeans, cotton, wheat, livestock, and dairy.
Flat rate crops.
Crops that didn't have a 5% price drop or we don't have good information for. They're what we call a flat rate category at $15 an acre.
And sales commodities like specialty crops and livestock. Sign up will run through December 11th at local Farm Service Agency offices. More details on CFAP2 are available online at www.farmers.gov/CFAP. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow Agnet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgnetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgnetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgnetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.